We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for week 16, the day after week 16. Today is Monday, December 23rd. I'm Jeff Erickson. As always, we are sponsored by Yahoo Fantasy Sports. And today, my co-host is Joe Bartel, taking over for Liz. Liz is traveling to England and didn't want to bring his equipment. I can understand that. So, Joe, thank you once again. As always, you've done this all year. You've stepped up when we needed somebody, and you're going to be a busy man today.
Yeah, it's going to be a media gauntlet. So I'm also filling in for you guys on the Sirius XM today with John McKechnie, and I'm excited to talk about that. I'm expecting some angry calls because I was with Mario Puig on Saturday, and we had a few. We were answering a lot of people, and it was like, all right, do I take this receiver, or Kenyon Drake? And to be fair, Mario was also like, no, let's just bench Kenyon Drake. But you know me, I've been low on Kenyon Drake all season long. And of course, he has his best two-game stretch of his career. And yeah, let's just say I'm expecting some angry people to phone in. But after that, we also are recording the Tuesday edition of the podcast a little bit early with Jake Letarski. We're going to be going over free agent pickups. So Travis Homer in particular, I think, is going to be a guy we talk about quite extensively for week 17. But also what I'm really excited for, we actually have a first-round mock draft prepared for that podcast, which will be airing tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. Can I get a quick spoiler, if I may? How many wide receivers go in the first round in a 12-team?
We have three right now.
I was going to guess it was two or three. I knew it was going to be low. But
Jake was waffling between another one. So I wouldn't be surprised if in 7 hours, wherever when we actually end up recording it, he ends up dipping out on that pick. But we're going back and forth on each one of the selections, and it's going to be in a PPR scoring. So that makes the receivers a little bit higher, but yeah, I mean, you could count Christian McCaffrey essentially as a receiver too, with how well he's been doing. But yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that one. We haven't done a mock draft like that before, certainly so early. Obviously, that's a 2020 version, and a lot of things can happen, as you know, when you've been doing all this baseball coverage, you know, from month to month. But it'll be fun. I think I'm looking forward to it.
All right, very good. Before we get into breaking news, how is your season? I know we talked a little bit about this here. I believe you're a champion in a league.
Yes, yeah. For the first time in 2 years, I can say I'm a champion. I did 13 leagues this year. I think you were pretty close to that number as well, right?
Yeah. Like of all the 13, not including best ball.
Yes, yeah. And I was just looking at my best ball. I actually won two of those, which was a nice little surprise as well this morning. Yeah, so 13 this year, and I checked my record maybe at like week 10, and I was literally at 500. Across all 13 leagues. I have no idea how somebody can be that horribly consistent, but that's where I was for most of it. I had six teams in the fantasy playoffs. Five got immediately bounced with the Mike Evans injury in that first week, and Lamar Jackson had, I guess, a dud for his standards as well, which kind of hurt me.
Game. Yep.
Yeah. Some higher scoring happened for my opponents, which always happens. I prepare for that as a fantasy analyst. That is basically what happens to me every year, is I get screwed by the other team scoring a bunch of points. So here I am thinking I'm out of the playoffs, and I go and check an NFFC league that I have. We did an online qualifier with my friend Dylan McGee, who has a great Twitch program that we were actually getting some views for in August when we did the draft. And turns out we ended up winning that one. So we had prepared. Thankfully, somebody had dropped Miles Sanders in week four, and we went and acquired him. And that was kind of our biggest reason. We had 228 points last week. It was Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, basically every high scorer there was last week. We had them in our lineup, and we survived this week and made up a 40-point difference from the start of the playoffs. And, hey, a champion. First time in 2 years I can finally say that. It feels good.
That is the beauty of the NFFC, the three-week playoff. It leavens out some of the outliers, especially like you mentioned, Mike Evans. I also have Mike Evans in the NFFC Classic, and thought that was the death knell for me, and I was able to have a massive week last week, not 220 like you had. This is a 14 teamer too, so I'm going to use that as a qualifier a little bit, but
as you should.
Yeah. And then yesterday, so close, Joe, so close. Okay, Marlon Mack got one touchdown, but he got stopped on fourth down on another goal line situation. And remember that they ran a quarterback sneak on their first series around the goal line. I also have Jack Doyle, who's targeting the end zone twice in that game. I also have Nick Chubb, who couldn't score from the goal line and wasn't given a chance a couple other times. So frustrating, so close. And then Miles Sanders, I also have. And, of course, we all know he went down on purpose there at the end just to finish up, run out the clock. But, it was the right play in real life. But, you know, it cost us a little bit in fantasy. That I'm currently 10th overall in the NFFC Classic. Monday night, there's too many people with players going. I'm not going to hold on to that spot, but it's a teasing example of fantasy football, what might have been.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think about specifically that Colts were aided by two punt return touchdowns.
Oh, yeah, that stunk too. Yeah.
I mean, not that Marlon Mack is going to go ahead and score on either one of those, but you can at least assume he's going to get some of that yardage, right? That's three or four additional points that you could almost lock in if it was just a normal punt or, as I like to say, a Packers return punt, which is normally negative yards since they're so bad at the special teams.
It's really hard to be that bad, by the way. I mean, all you have to do is fall forward.
You would think, right, but through 10 weeks, the Packers had negative return yards. Thankfully, they signed a guy, Tyler Irvin, and now we actually have somebody who can get 5 yards in return. It's incredible, the difference in field position when you're not starting at the 15 instead of the 20 every time they punt to you.
Right, exactly. That's amazing. So I won my individual matchup there. I won one other league, a small league, like $20 entry fee league, hardly counts, but won it, so better than not winning it. Could have been a really good year. It turned out to be an okay year. And I'm hanging on for dear life in the stake league too. I think I'm still an eater after this week, but last 2 weeks the struggle has been real. Losing Derrick Henry like I did, you know, the nature of how I lost him yesterday. We'll talk about that in a second here. Well, let's start with that. You know, let's start with Saints and Titans. First of all, you know, a lot of the games happened on Saturday where you lose some alternatives. I personally would have started Sony Michel had I known Derrick Henry wasn't going to play, gotten my 10 points, moved on. Instead, I had to go into scramble mode, and I picked the wrong alternative to pick up to replace Henry because someone else snagged Deion Lewis before I had a chance to.
I was going
to
say, there's no way they would have let you have that one.
Well, he was available, but Shue swooped in and grabbed him before I had a chance. So I was debating between Quadri Olison and Gio Bernard. And I went Olison, and then the news came out about Joe Mixon dealing with a stomach flu and a stomach bug. I'm like, oh, maybe Gio gets more work today. So against the Dolphins, that's great. So I went Gio. And of course, Olison scored and Gio did jack squat. So that's every point matters in the stake league.
Oh yeah, no kidding. Especially, I don't even want to talk about the stake league and how bad my team was. I have so many frustrations with how that season's played out. But you're absolutely right. I mean, like the Deion Lewis play, and I had a lot of people on Twitter asking me about that too. If for no other reason that you're picking up Mike Boone or Alexander Mattison to block the Delvin Cook owner, the same thought process applied for Deion Lewis. And I actually wrote the note Saturday when the news came out that he was deemed questionable. And then they also signed a practice squad guy. That was like this is a big red flag. It wasn't so much that he moved from no injury to questionable. But when they signed a practice squad guy, that was like he's not going to be playing. And of course, Deion Lewis, I mean, he didn't do a lot, 78 total yards and 16 touches. But that's something. And it's a good play by Shue or anybody else, really, to go ahead and block the Derrick Henry owner in that regards. But it's crazy to think about with the Bengals and Dolphins, particularly your Bengals, where they score it felt like 100 points. Yet Giovanni Bernard couldn't do anything in that contest, especially with Mixon being sick. Like that's just it feels like a one-off instance. But Miles Gaskins, how about him for a surprise running back for the Dolphins? He had 55 yards and touchdown, very clearly surpassing Patrick Laird, who was a darling, it feels like, in the DFS circles for the past 4 or 5 weeks now.
Yeah, and Laird got his chances early, too. So it was clear, like, okay, we need to see something else. Yeah, that was a surreal game. 23 points in the fourth quarter to tie it, including touchdown, two-point conversion, onside kick, touchdown with the play clock running, with the clock running out, and a two-point conversion after that to tie the game. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no kidding. I've been dabbling a little bit in some prop bets, and I think Ryan Fitzpatrick's passing yards were set at like 270, and he hit that almost in the first half. And I was kicking myself that I didn't go with Andy Dalton either. And then after three quarters, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I didn't go ahead and take the over on his passing yards. And of course, he throws for like 200 in that fourth quarter. It was nuts. I definitely had clicked over to the Chargers-Raiders game by the end of that Dolphins Bengals contest, thinking, of course, you know, I had Devontae Parker's over receiving yards and Ryan Fitzpatrick, so there's no need to keep track of what's going on. And yet here we are with the Bengals scoring, you know, tons of points at the end and Andy Dalton doing some stuff. He and Ryan Fitzpatrick have to be your QB flex heroes of this week, right? Like there's no other alternative besides those two, right?
I picked up Andy Dalton in the stake league and started him over Jacoby Brissett. And for a while, I thought I made the wrong decision, especially after Brissett got the rushing touchdown. But no, that worked out. That was crazy surreal. It's the one thing that did work for me in that league. Let's talk about a little bit more about that Titans-Saints game, because Titans are, even though they lost, they're now in a stronger position than they were because the Steelers lost as well. So they get to go to they have to have a rematch with Houston, and Houston says they're going to play their starters, but there's zero reason for them to do so. Titans have to have a little bit of an advantage in their chance to win the last playoff spot. They win either by winning or by Pittsburgh losing in Baltimore.
Yeah, and I don't know what we're getting from the Baltimore side of things. Of course, they have the number one seed already locked up. Mark Ingram is having an MRI today. That's not great. And I think if you were the Ravens and you said, hey, you're more than likely guaranteed the number one spot, you know, even if you play a competitive half against the Browns, given how inept they've been this season, I think they would have rather went that direction as opposed to risking Mark Ingram, who's a vital part of their offense. But I don't know if he's that vital. We can get to that a little bit more later, but you're right. And then the Titans, I hope they make the playoffs. I'll just say it that way. Not that I really am excited, or not that I'm not excited to see a 10-3 win over the Steelers in the first round of the AFC Championship. So should they get there, it just doesn't, I mean, they're not a really competitive team right now. And frankly, they haven't been since Ben Roethlisberger's been out, right? That's the Steelers that you want in the playoffs, a team with an explosive quarterback, not one that throws pick sixes like Jameis Winston every time, and not one that's waffling between guys, whether it be Duck Hodges or Mason Rudolph, which has been a multi-week conundrum for Mike Tomlin. Yeah. Credit to the Steelers for putting together a lot of stuff, to overcoming a lot of those injuries. Like that's great. Love that. But I would much rather see this Titans offense, which I don't know if you got to see the Saints or Titans game, but I was watching pretty extensively. I thought the weather was going to be a bigger part of Drew Brees' struggles, but I really felt like it actually affected the Titans a little bit. Like A.J. Brown had two big plays and that was it, given how effective he's been the past couple weeks now. It's crazy to think that he could only do two big plays against the Saints.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you got it. Hey, it paid the bills. That's the one thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is nice.
And you could not play AJ Brown. Like, I got it. Like, Marcus Lattimore, Saints defense. But this was a must-win situation for the Titans. And yeah, they've been playing for their playoff lives for a few weeks now. But still, you had to have AJ Brown in your lineup with the big run, and of course the big touchdown catch too. I think I was reading Liss's week 16 observations, and he was saying Ryan Tannehill will be quarterback 12 in 2020 August drafts. And I thought that was absurd to think about. And then I looked at the numbers a little bit more. And I'm like, oh, you know what? That makes a little bit of sense. But then, okay, compared to this year, Lamar Jackson was QB 12. So can Ryan Tannehill even get close to the floor that Lamar Jackson was going to give you if you assumed he would be a quarterback? No. So I don't know if he is that high of a fantasy asset. But, I mean, again, Tajay Sharpe also had an appearance this past week against the Saints too.
Right.
If they had more weapons besides A.J. Brown or besides Derrick Henry, that is an offense that I think could be really fantasy productive, as we've seen the past 6 or 7 weeks now.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, you know, the Titans are having all sorts of attrition at wide receiver. Corey Davis left with a possible concussion, as did Khalif Raymond. I mean, that was a horrible play there.
Yeah.
Horrible hit that wasn't called, by the way. And they were more concerned about whether it was a catch and a fumble than, oh, whether he got knocked the heck out. And you can replace heck with what you want. But that was a terrible no call. I mean, for all the plays we've looked at as questionable hits, you get someone just gets straight up knocked out on a helmet to helmet, and they don't call that at all. It's crazy.
Well, no, see, the shoulder did hit the helmet on that play, from at least the advantage that I saw. But what I never understand with these rules, and I remember very vividly with Davante Adams and Danny Trevathan. I think it was a Monday night game or it was a Thursday night game with the Bears, either last year or the year before that. What constitutes allowing the receiver to make a move? Like, at what point are you allowed to just completely Ronnie Lott crush him? And and that's where I thought Raymond didn't get a chance to really set himself or protect himself. And you're supposed to be doing that. Like, that's one of the big things the referees are supposed to be looking out for. And that didn't happen. Now, I guess maybe it was a bang bang play. And I hate when people use that analogy, but there might not be a better way to describe what happened with Raymond there. It wasn't a head-to-head, but it was definitely a shoulder to the head. And you're right, he was just completely knocked out. And I also hate when turnovers happen due to injury. Like, when you see somebody tear their ACL and then they grab their knee and drop the ball. I guess you should, as a football player, power through, you know, quote-unquote, that kind of injury. I hate that, though. Like,
you can't.
It's realistic to expect your player to do that. And I hate when that happens. But you can't have it like soccer where you're just faking injuries and then, oh, yeah, I can just drop the ball or whatever else. So it can't go both ways.
I understand. I understand about that. In that same game, Alvin Kamara got well, 11 for 80, 2 touchdowns, 6 for 30 in receiving as well. And this is the Alvin Kamara you paid for.
Yeah. And that's who I actually did pay for in that NFFC league that we talked about that one. That was our high pick. It was either Kamara or McCaffrey. And I can't help but think about Stake League, once again, given how dismal I was this year. Do you remember when Christian McCaffrey was on the Stake League board and he was, I think he was up to like $55 or $56, and then the bid got messed up or something, and then Liss said, oh, this is a standard scoring league, and he went down $14 on that transaction?
I don't remember it going down that much, but I do remember it being cheaper than it should have been.
Yeah, it's frustrating to think about. I was in on McCaffrey to start with, and Liss's comment definitely scared me off, and I'm embarrassed to say that now. And you look at Kamara too, right? Like that's you were not expecting a McCaffrey type of season for Kamara, but you're expecting a little bit more than what, 3 or 4 touchdowns and maybe a little bit over 12,000 combined or 1,200 combined yards. Like that's Austin Eckler territory. Eckler was going 5 or 6 rounds later, and yet here we are. It's great to see him do well this week, but we could have used that. I don't know. Weeks 1 through 15.
Yeah, no kidding. He had 2 other huge games. He had the Seattle game, which was huge, and one other huge game, I guess, and 2 others where he kind of contributed good sized numbers. But yeah, the lack of scoring is what was a real killer, and a lot of that is just the way the Saints run the ball. I mean, way they throw the ball in the red zone, and they throw to their tight ends, they throw to Taysom Hill, Michael Thomas got his. Yeah, I was going up against Michael Thomas in the NFFC, and at one point my game was a little bit closer, and he had that catch And then it was ruled not a touchdown. I'm like, okay, thank goodness. And then he gets one more catch for the touchdown. I'm like, oh, so that's even worse. He got an extra point against me because of that. Fine. Okay, great. But it was illustrative of, okay, they weren't handing the ball off at the one that time. Kamara had already gotten his by then. So, you know, his owners were probably pretty happy. So a lot of things going on in that game. That were pretty wild. Before we move on, quick note from our sponsors at Armchair Quarterback. Armchair Quarterback is a real-time game where you predict the next play during a live football broadcast. You know what the next play is going to be. Predict it and earn points. Climb the leaderboard and increase your chances to win tickets and other prizes. It's the perfect way to make watching games more exciting. We have a special league for all RotoWire subscribers, and we'll be posting a leaderboard online and mentioning them here. You can also form your own league with your fantasy friends. The full schedule and game information is available at armchairquarterback.com. Armchair Quarterback, make every game bigger. There were a couple of disaster games out there, none bigger than Seattle losing at home to Arizona, and it wasn't especially close, Joe.
No, absolutely not. And I think the Chris Carson injury might have impacted things. I was talking with Harry Thompson, one of our tech guys at the office, and also a really good fantasy player. He's in the fantasy championships right now with your maybe not mortal enemy, but Chu is right there up there for you. And they both made it to the Vegas championships. He had Chris Carson, and Carson did fine in that first quarter. I wonder what could have been if he was healthy the entire time. Not saying that the Seahawks, how bad they played, would have won, but I think it would have changed the outcome a little bit, because Travis Homer very clearly is not nearly as effective as what they need him to be in that Seattle offense. And it was surprising to me not see not see Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf do anything. Like, we knew the tight ends, Jacob Hollister, was going to do some stuff, but it was surprising, especially with Carson out, having what, your third string running back in there taking the majority of the snaps, and you couldn't have Lockett or Metcalf do anything in terms of receiving. That was an embarrassing performance from that offense, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really don't understand what happened. Lockett got 8 targets, but only 1 catch for 12 yards. Metcalf had a bagel. I mean, that's amazing. And it was only 1 target. I don't understand that, Joe.
I have no idea either. Mario and I talked on Saturday for SiriusXM, and he was saying if ever there was a receiver that would match up well with Patrick Peterson, and we know Patrick Peterson may be one of the best cornerbacks of all time, but he's kind of fallen off a little bit lately. Not Xavier Rhodes falling off, but he's not all of the Patrick Peterson we know him to be. If there's a guy that Peterson would match up with, it was Metcalf. And I was like, no. They're going to pass the ball. It's the Arizona secondary. The Seahawks need to win this game. There's going to be a lot of offense involved. And there was, from Kenyon Drake and nobody else. It just was weird to see. And for somebody that is obviously a huge Russell Wilson fan, we're based here in Madison, Wisconsin, so it's almost like by birthright that we have to be Russell Wilson fans. It was really weird to see him do nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. And Lockett getting as many targets as he did. Again, Hollister did some stuff. That's fine. Tight ends are, you know, gods against the Cardinals defense. We get that now. It's been for 2 or 3 years, games that we've seen that happen. But it just has been – it was almost uncomfortable, honestly. Like, I was flipping back and forth between the Eagles, Cowboys, Chargers, Raiders, and then looking at the Seahawks, Cardinals. And every time I seemed to click on the Seahawks in offense, it was 3-and-out, rolling around, or just not rhythm-based offense that we've seen from Seattle for most of the season. I can't explain it. I can't wait to read some of the articles that you guys write this week to kind of figure out more, because – just from my, my perspective, I thought this was a bit of an embarrassing play calling performance in a game they need to win for the Seahawks.
Absolutely. Week 9, he throws for 5 touchdowns and 378 yards. They win in overtime. Since then, 232-1, 200-1, 240-2, not bad, 245-0, 286-2 last week against Carolina, 169-1 touchdown this week. Just remarkably impotent performances. And, you know, last 2 weeks, he's not even scrambling for you either. 2 carries for 2 yards, 3 carries for -1 last week. And, you know, it's just, I think the offensive line is a kind of maybe quietly an issue there. And beyond that, I think they're just kind of falling apart. It's really kind of a crazy thing. And yeah, it's just horrible. And you mentioned they lose Chris Carson. They lost Rashad Penny the week before, devastating injuries. Both out for the season. Carson's out with a hip now. And their third string, CJ Prosise, out with a broken arm. They are in real trouble.
Yeah, as a Packers fan, it's weird to see every other team in the NFC have significant injuries, and here we are dealing with maybe a Brian Bulaga injury every once in a while. Like, the Packers are never, they're never the healthiest team when it comes to the fan, or when it comes to the playoffs in the NFL. And that's kind of what we're looking at right now. The 49ers are definitely dinged up. The Saints, not so much, but they actually have, they have their warts as well. And the Seahawks, I mean, you would have, if you asked me what my biggest concern was for the Packers in a Super Bowl run, it would have been the 49ers or Seahawks. And you look at both those teams with all the injuries they have right now, and I feel a lot better. You, you talked about the Seahawks as well for their offensive line. Dwayne Brown was a late scratch on Saturday, their left tackle they traded for a couple of years ago. I think that made a bit of a bit of a difference. It shouldn't have made that big of a difference, though. Yeah. And I think that's where missing all those running backs, it all kind of came into one. And, you know, for as bad as the Cardinals have played, we've seen them be productive at stretches. I just would have thought Kyler Murray would be more impactful, not Brett Hundley, former Packers backup, coming in and doing what he needed to do to get the win. Like, that was the crazy part to me. If you would have said Cardinals beat the Seahawks by two touchdowns, whatever it was, I would have thought, oh, Murray throws for 250 and runs for another 60, and he has three touchdowns in that game. Not, he's out at halftime, and here's Brett Hundley now managing this offense to a win.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, week 17 is kind of shaping up to be kind of nightmarish. You know, you mentioned Kyler Murray. They, you know, it's a pretty good chance he's not going to play. There's no reason to force him there. You know, and it just, you know, it's a hamstring injury. It's your prized possession. The game means nothing to them. Means a lot to, and it means nothing to the Rams either. Rams are out, so there's zero reason to push him back. Hundley, meanwhile, and like you said, he game managed that afterward. He scrambled well, six carries for 35 yards. There's a couple big running first downs in that sequence there. And yes, Kenyon Drake, playoff hero. Guy you hated, Joe. I hated him, mocked me for liking him. But it's all right. He, you were right until you were wrong, basically.
I was going to say, who ends up winning that argument? Because we had multiple battles on SiriusXM as to what Kenyon Drake's value was going to be. And I was like, no, there's no way he's worth a fourth, fifth, or sixth round pick. And for 13, 12 weeks of the season, I was right. However, since he's come over to the Cardinals, not only did he become a really relevant fantasy running back, he also cut into David Johnson, who I thought was a very clear number four guy. And I know that you and Liz have mocked extensively, and I've finally washed my hands of the David Johnson sins. I will no longer make that mistake again. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what the Cardinals do with Kenyon Drake. He is an undrafted, or he is a free agent this year. So it's going to be interesting if they want the compensatory pick that they are going to get, I would imagine, a third, well, probably a fourth rounder, and they paid a fifth or sixth round price. So you've done well in acquiring a talent that you put him in a position to get a better pick. Do you make the mistake and double down on re-signing him? That's going to be the question mark that I think we're going to have to find out in the offseason what the Cardinals do.
Yeah, it kind of depends on your perspective of whether running backs matter, I guess, you know, if you're in that camp. Yeah, Mario was writing about that. He suggests that it would be a third. And he goes, but the Cardinals will probably sign him. You know, the thing is, since coming over, week 9, 15-110 for a touchdown against the Niners in that Thursday night Halloween game, also four catches for 52 yards. And then three straight weeks of kind of or four straight weeks. But you look at some of those opponents, too. Tampa Bay, San Francisco again, the Rams and Pittsburgh, all pretty good run defenses. Then he faces two weaker run defenses in Cleveland, Seattle, and just absolutely destroys him, becomes a playoff hero. I don't know. It's interesting. You know, he could have won fantasy leagues, but he also could have been that sore spot on your bench in fantasy playoffs, too. I saw that happen, where he went off on people's benches.
I mean, that was what we recommended on SiriusXM on Saturday, too. Mario and I were both saying, no, a number of receivers we'd rather take over Drake. And I didn't see that kind of performance. I mean, you look at his numbers in seven games with the Cardinals, 583 rushing yards. His career numbers in 16 games, the most rushing yards he ever had was his second year with the Dolphins at 644. Mm-hmm. He's done that in seven games. It's incredible to think about. And I mean, the biggest takeaway, and this should be life's biggest takeaway, is Adam Gase is a horrible coach.
Yes. Right?
Like, he's had Ryan Tannehill, Kenny Drake, and we've seen them be so successful. Not just like, oh, yeah, they're doing all right. Major players this season. And yet he couldn't do anything with those guys when he had them on the team, when he was building the offense around them. Absolutely nothing. It's incredible to think. And that's exactly why, if you are taking Le'Veon Bell or thinking about taking him next year in drafts, be very mindful what the Jets do at the head coach position, because if Gase is around, I want nothing to do with Le'Veon Bell. And I know that's a firm statement to make December 23rd, but I feel as confident saying that now as I will August 23rd of 2020, because I just don't want anything to do with him as a head coach right now.
I understand completely. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, my bargain. What a bargain. Great value in the Steak League.
Steak League value, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome, guys. Thanks. So, you know, it turns out, you know, Derrick Henry was the bargain, however, until last week, of course. But yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you're right. Just think if they had Drake, Devontae Parker, Tannehill, they put together a pretty good offense there. Oh,
that's the most explosive offense in 2019. If you add AJ Brown in there too, and yet they had that for multiple seasons and could do nothing. And I get it. Devontae Parker has definitely emerged this season. There's a lot of good things to see. And you watch the tape a little bit of his route running. He's gotten better. I wouldn't blame Parker's sudden emergence entirely on Adam Gase's ineptitude, but I do place a lot of it on Tannehill and Drake, because Tannehill has had all the athletic traits that you could imagine at quarterback, hasn't been able to put it all together. And here we are now with him doing some crazy things. To me, it actually reminds me of Mitchell Trubisky a little bit. Like, I know that we're all on board with the Bears head coach and how great he's going to be, Matt Nagy. Oh yeah, he's this godsend for the Bears. He's doing some creative things in offense. I don't know if you watched much of that game last night, but that was bad, ugly, and disgusting. And part of it's on Trubisky, but I think a lot of part of it, or at least some part of it, should also be on Nagy for the play calling. Like, I went to that Bears Packers game this past week, or like before this. That Trubisky had some good throws. He was athletic, moving around in the pocket. Why did it take 14 games into the season for them to be like, oh yeah, Trubisky can like do things out of the pocket. That's where he's most best. Like, why don't we move the offense around that? I don't get that. I don't think we'll ever get that. And it's going to be one of the more underrated questions that won't be answered from the 2019 season. Why they didn't use Trubisky as a mobile quarterback more? I think the Bears offense would have been better. And it's a confidence and rhythm thing if he starts doing that earlier in the season as opposed to week 15, week 14. And maybe that makes a difference for Chicago's postseason aspirations. I don't know.
Yeah, you're singing to the choir as far as the Bears fans I know. Bennett Carroll, our producer on SiriusXM, a huge Bears fan. And he has similar views on Nagy. I mean, even Trubisky himself after the Packer game, you know, they were debating, you know, he goes, you know, we should have had more rollouts. And the thing is, Trubisky's value had recovered quite a bit in the last few weeks, and then there was a big backslide last night. But I think some of that is also on the I think some of that's also on the Chiefs actually being a legit defense. What do you think about that?
No. I'm right there with you, and I'm still concerned. And maybe this is just me having watched football now for very extensively for the last 20 years. Probably it's an exaggeration. We could say 15 years, and that's an educated watching of football, and just knowing who the Patriots are and what they are in the postseason in particular, it's hard for me to ever assume they're going to lose just because history says they won't. They never lose in the postseason, despite all of us begging, pleading the football gods that they will lose. It doesn't happen very often. I think the Ravens present the biggest problem for the Patriots. I just feel like Bill Belichick can scheme things effectively enough to handle the Chiefs offense. And what handling means is still probably Mahomes throwing for 270 yards and two touchdowns. But I just get concerned as to what Bill Belichick can do. I have the utmost respect for him as a coach and a game caller to mitigate or take away what Mahomes' strengths are. And it's basically like a steroid version of Trubisky, right? Like, he's great outside of the pocket. He can make some crazy plays. He also has an incredible arm, and he has significantly better weapons, speed in particular. But the Patriots kind of have a lot of things to counter that, right? Stephon Gilmore is literally a shutdown machine. We saw it with John Brown this past week, save for a touchdown. And I don't know. I'm worried that the Patriots Chiefs there to square off again. Bill Belichick knows what to do against Mahomes. And even if they have a defense, they can do enough offensively with the Patriots that can get 17 points. And that's all they need.
Yeah, that's right. And the Chiefs did win in Foxborough. They kind of saw that. Mahomes went 283 and one touchdown, but it wasn't pretty. You know, they had one really nice pass to Mecole Hardman. They had that gimmicky play that worked really well for the Kelce rushing touchdown, and the Pats offense struggles were the real story in that. They seem to fix a few things against the Bills this past week. Brady looked actually kind of quietly good. It's almost like they taking away Edelman in a way forced him to use his young receivers a little bit more, and it might have opened up a few things that they didn't have in the past.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Again, we saw this game, the Patriots Chiefs, 3 weeks ago, and Brady wasn't the same guy. But whatever the reason, and maybe I'm just like overly pessimistic about the Patriots, given what we've seen the past couple of years. I just don't know how, when it comes postseason time, somebody really knows how to game plan for Belichick. Not right. that he's like not trying during the regular season, but what the Patriots do in the postseason is significantly different than what they do in the regular season. We've seen it now for 3 or 4 or 5 seasons where like, oh man, the sky's falling down. Patriots don't look very good. And here it is against the Bills defense, which was one of the best, if not the best in the NFL. Oh, he throws for 270 and a touchdown, despite really having his best receiver and only receiver being severely limited and missing time during the game. It just is I need to see them lose before I can really believe it's going to happen. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it is fair to say, and we'll see. We'll watch this, but you know, getting that 2 seed is huge for them too. They get in a week to recover. They get play their first playoff game in their fortress, and that's pretty huge. And you know, the Chiefs have their own playoff demons. Let's not assume that they're going to win that first playoff game, especially if it's Chiefs Titans. We've seen this movie before.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I guess I don't know. I mean, if Derrick Henry's not playing, and I would assume he would be, but if Henry's not playing during that game, there's no chance. I think I'd take the Chiefs by 17, maybe 14, like at least 2 touchdown score. But if Henry's out there, that's a player that can dictate the tempo of the game. They can build, and they have built, the Titans have their entire offense around him. But really, it's those body shots that I think make a big difference. You're playing now 4 months of national football. You're doing practice every single day. You have games on Sunday, and you're having a 250-pound behemoth running at you, getting at least 3 to 4 yards without being touched, and then you have to bring him down 20, 30 times a game. That's one of those where softer teams, and I don't know if the Chiefs are, but like the Packers. I mean, that's like the definition of the Mike McCarthy Packers, where they were just soft, and they couldn't handle those types of players. That would be a real concern, I think, for any team when you're talking about 18 weeks of football being played. That makes a big difference when a guy like Henry's running at you 20, 25 times a game.
Yeah. If the Steelers somehow squeak this through and they win and the Titans lose, I think they're dead. I don't want to underestimate Mike Tomlin and his ability to game plan for a game and the Chiefs' ability to kind of give things away. But I think the Chiefs would smoke them. I feel pretty confident saying that.
If this was like the the NF West game or NFC West game where the Seahawks were that 7-9 division winner a couple of years ago, and it was the Beastquake game, I would see things a little bit different. Again, if it was a home game for Pittsburgh, but not when it's at Kansas City. That's a Mahomes runs wild and has a vintage Mahomes. Yeah, he's only 2 years of starting quarterback. That'll be a vintage Mahomes game.
I don't even think it's that. I just think the Chiefs defense will just smoke and smother the Pittsburgh offense. The Pittsburgh offense is dead man walking. They don't have a quarterback and they can't decide on a running back. Well, James Conner got hurt again and all that. I just think their offense is so impotent. I think the Steelers defense is legit awesome. I don't know if it's vintage Mahomes so much as it's this revitalized Kansas City defense that's going to shut things down. And they'll play the field position game. But regardless, I don't think that I see a whole lot out of Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh switched quarterbacks middle of the game, and then Rudolph gets hurt in that game again, so they have to go back to the duck. Brutal game.
Real quick, where would you draft Juju Smith-Schuster next year? Have you like thought about what his value? Because man, it has plummeted.
It's way low. I mean, I want to see who's their quarterback. You got to tell me who that is first.
Let's assume Big Ben comes back and you're getting a Philip Rivers this season, but like 10% better Roethlisberger.
I'd probably put Juju because he's got that connection with Ben. I'd probably put him 4th round, 5th. I don't know. We'll see how healthy Juju is.
Around higher than that. I think he'd be like the Todd Gurley range.
3rd or 4th.
That we saw this past August.
Could be. Yeah, I'm probably living too much in the moment right now. You know, I don't really. It's hard to project a guy like that. You're right, but you know, I'll want him at a discounted price because I do believe in the talent. Just not this year. I've given up hope for this year. Before we finish up the wrapping up week 16, another note for sports and betting fans in the New Jersey area. This is the moment you've been waiting for. Sports betting is available today on Yahoo Sports and the Yahoo Sports app, powered by BetMGM. Yahoo Sportsbook, powered by BetMGM, allows fans nationwide to view betting odds across a variety of sports, and users of a legal age to bet in the state of New Jersey can click through the odds to place bets on BetMGM. New users 21 or older in New Jersey can make their first $10 deposit and receive $100 in free bets. Go to BetMGM.com/Yahoo to get started and for full offer terms and conditions. Also, Yahoo Daily Fantasy continues to launch new fantasy contests every day. Visit yahoo.com/dailyfantasy to enter an NFL, NBA, or NHL contest today. I want to thank Yahoo for sponsoring us all season long. We do appreciate that. So, Joe, we talked a little bit about the Pittsburgh and, you know, James Conner once again hosing his owners. Anybody took a chance in starting him with that mid-game injury yet again. Got the Monday night game coming up here. We got your Packers going on the road to face Minnesota. We're going to have no Dalvin Cook, and Alexander Mattison is a game time decision. A lot of people are touting that this is a Mike Boone game. Where do you weigh in on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm the new guy on SiriusXM, right? That's kind
new
of
new guy. That's right.
New guy is my nickname, but I think if I was to give myself anything, it would be the pessimistic Packers fan, and okay. That's kind of how I've operated since I have been here at RotoWire. There's at least Wisconsin sports has taught me in particular never to get too happy because something bad is about to come around the corner, whether it be a game 7 loss to the Dodgers before the World Series, or the Badgers not winning the championship against Duke, something like that, like in March Madness. There's always something bad going to happen. And it's great. All this postseason success, Brewers make it to the playoffs, Packers are always around there. Something bad's always going to happen. This feels so Wisconsin sports tonight against the Vikings, where, of course, Dalvin Cook, the biggest weapon between both teams, is going to be out. Alexander Mattison has a high ankle sprain. Even if he plays, that doesn't mean anything. He can't do anything. Kirk Cousins and his ineptitude on Monday Night Football, this sets up the Packers to be successful, and yet they'll find a way to lose by 7 points. And I think as a result, it's going to be a Boone game. The offense is built around the running attack. Whoever's back there doesn't really concern me. And I think the Packers defense has been inconsistent. That's probably a polite way of putting it, stopping the run. And I could see Boone getting 15 for 60 carry-wise, and then getting 2 or 3 catches for 30 yards. Like, that's 90 to 100 total yards is what I think he's going to get so long as Mattison is not playing or doing very much if he's active. And I do think that Stephon Diggs and Thielen are going to have their way against the secondary. Kirk Cousins is going to get his first win on Monday night, and it'll be in a hugely important game. Like, if the Packers win this, you have a chance at not even getting the number 2 seed, but the 1 seed. Like, it's right there with what we saw the 49ers on Saturday and the Saints even against the Titans. There's no guarantees right now, and this is a huge opportunity for them to have a huge playoff bye week when they're entirely healthy. Again, that's the big thing with the Packers.
Right.
Of all the NFC juggernauts, they are by far the healthiest. They have a few weapons in Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, but that's it. What can Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith do? That'll be the big question against Kirk Cousins, and I'm not optimistic, so I'm thinking the Vikings end up walking away with this one.
That's the funny thing is, I actually think when everybody is healthy that Minnesota might be a slightly better team than the Packers, but yet they have such an uphill battle to try to win the division. They need to win twice, and the Packers need to lose twice, and we all know the Lions are really paper Lions when it comes to facing the Packers. So, it's really remarkable what a bad run that the Lions have had against the Pack. It's such a huge uphill battle for Minnesota that they could, they should be resting there anybody that's possibly hurt because they're pretty much locked into their position.
I don't think the Packers are losing the Lions either. I'm right there with you. Despite what Booger McFarland might complain about with that Monday night game, I'm glad that he won't be announcing next Sunday's contest against the Lions. You're right, though. It is a tough one, and I'm eating crow now still today. I thought for certain, with the most important game of the Vikings season, Monday Night Football at Minnesota, there was absolutely no way Dalvin Cook was not going to play in that game. And I got it. Adam Schefter was tweeting about it on Tuesday. Oh, he could be out for the next 2 weeks. And I'm like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. But here we are now, Monday, December 23rd, talking about the Vikings missing their star running back, their biggest and most important player on that offense, perhaps on that team. And yet I still feel like the Vikings are going to win. And it goes back to, well, for me, I think the biggest concern is at Minnesota. Like, if this is at Lambeau, I feel a little bit more comfortable. They can control the crowd. But when it's in that dome and how loud they get, and Aaron Rodgers' struggles in particular in that new place, it's hard for me to assume that receiving core can really do enough things. I get it. Xavier Rhodes is super bad, but the receiving core for the Packers is even worse than Davante Adams. And I don't see how they can take advantage of it in that environment in particular.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you on that. I am predicting that the Vikes are going to win 27-21. I just think they find a way, we'll see about Mike Boone. Everybody, fantasy Twitter loves Mike Boone, loves him. You know, he had a great pro day at Cincinnati, but, he doesn't have draft pedigree. The Vikings went and spent a third round pick on Madison this year. If he was so great, if he's such a great athlete, why did they spend a third round pick on his replacement, to be the backup to Cook, but Boone looked great in the preseason this year. He's got these measurables. Now, can he turn that into production?
Yeah, that's going to be the big key for today's game. And again, if Madison is playing, I'm not really concerned about it. Like, there's only so much you can do with a high ankle sprain. I just don't see how he can be effective. But a guy like Amir Abdullah or CJ Ham, I think, do enough to take away from Mike Boone's production that he isn't this automatic flex or running back two play that you might have assumed on Saturday as soon as Dalvin Cook was ruled out. Like, I don't think he's getting that, but I do think he's getting 80 to 90 total yards, which I guess is enough to be a flex play, but it's going to be an uneasy one. If he falls in the end zone, that's kind of what you're looking for, because I think he has the real opportunity to, and they're going to move the ball enough. I have Vikings 24-17. And I disagree with you a little bit. I do think the Packers, both teams completely healthy, are good enough to beat the Vikings. But if they play 10 times in a season, I think the Packers win 5 and the Vikings win 5. Like, it's not going to be
much close. More different. I don't think we're that far off in our perceptions, to be honest with you. I think they're slightly better. If they played 100 times, I think it'd be like 51-49. So
I think I'm right there with you on that one.
Yeah. So there you have it. Okay. Very good. Before we sign off, any closing thoughts on week 16? Anything else that caught your eye?
Jake and I will talk about it today. And of course on the Tuesday podcast with all these injuries going on, and I hope that you're not playing a week 17 championship, but sometimes there's some stupid people out there that have designated their leagues that way. And you're gonna have to deal with a lot of stuff like Kyler Murray, Chris Carson. There's some major injuries that
Mark Ingram
on top of the Mike Evans and Chris Godwin's. Yeah. Mark Ingram too. Like, there's a lot of injuries that have happened over the last 3 weeks. So being diligent on the waiver wire is going to be a huge thing to do. And I know there's going to be a lot of different options to pick from. We're going to have to do our best to kind of sort through that stuff. But a guy like Travis Homer with an important game for the Seahawks makes a lot of sense for me as one of the top pickups. And I'm going to be interested to see just how well he does next week, because I think not that you can be a league winner in 1 week. Like, you can't designate those players. Lamar Jackson, Chris McCaffrey, those are league winners. But I think Travis Homer could do enough to make a difference in your championship game should you be playing stupidly on week 17.
Yeah, right. And we have, like, sometimes total points matter. Sometimes you have side pets, things like that.
Sure.
But yeah, it's going to be difficult. The Ravens, they have all the incentive to rest all their starters. We know Ingram's not going to play. It's almost certain with his calf injury. There's no reason to rush him back. And they might want to see a little bit more out of Justice Hill. They might want to see a little bit more out of Gus Edwards, who's averaging over 5 yards a carry in his NFL career. You can see that. But they probably don't want to play Jackson next week. The NFC, on the other hand, everybody's battling for that one seed. It means everything. So that's the difference. The one thing you might see is, say, if the Packers do win tonight, then Minnesota has all the reason to shut down everybody, because they've clinched the playoff spot and they can't jockey for a better position. So that's the one thing, that team that doesn't have any incentive to play for anything. Everybody else, they're battling.
The other guys I've mentioned are the record setters. So we already have Michael Thomas. Yep. He was going to get that record regardless. After like week 10, we knew that was a first certainty. How about Christian McCaffrey getting over 1,000 receiving yards?
Yeah.
And Austin Eckler only needing, like, I think 80 or something like that to get over 1,000 receiving yards too. I think those guys, especially when the teams don't matter, like the Chargers and Panthers, force feeding your studs to get those extra little things to add to the resume. Those are other things I look for in week 17 that could be a big benefit. Now, you're not going to be not playing Christian McCaffrey or, frankly, Austin Eckler. But I think if you're like, oh, I don't know what they're going to do, just those guys that could set a record or have career seasons or whatever else, I think it's fair to say that the teams are going to do their best to get those marks if they're completely out of playoff contention.
Yeah, McCaffrey needs 67 receiving yards against New Orleans. Not a sure thing, especially if New Orleans is trying, which they will be.
I'll take the over. I'll take the over easy on that one.
Yeah, I mean, he had, like, what, 15 targets yesterday, 15 catches
exactly,
yesterday?
Exactly, with Will Greer, yeah. There's no way Christian McCaffrey does not get 67 receiving yards. I'll put my new guy name on it right now that McCaffrey gets over 67 receiving yards next Sunday.
One ill-timed helmet to the hip, dude. That's all it takes. but you know, and the thing is, you know, Will Greer is terrible. I think we saw that. Carolina is terrible. They've given up, except for McCaffrey. So yeah. And then speaking of Carolina, I know you had to go to do a Sirius XM, so we'll get you off after that. But DJ Moore is another one we'll be watching. That destroyed me, by the way. That really, really hurt me. The early concussion. That was a game where going up with the Colts with no Kenny Moore, that was projected to be a pretty decent matchup. Obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, I missed that one when I was going through and reading everything else. I was low on DJ Moore to begin with. I just didn't know what Will Greer was going to do as a quarterback. I'm super in on DJ Moore as a talent. He and Curtis Samuel, I think, are sneakily one of the better receiving duos that we have in the NFL. And if you have a competent quarterback, and at this point, I don't even think Cam Newton is a competent quarterback in his career. But if you have one of those, I think you're going to see both Samuel and Moore be complete breakouts. Moore already kind of had his breakout season this year, but those guys are really good. I just don't think Will Greer is anywhere close to an NFL talent at the quarterback position. And I was concerned about what he could do. So I'm glad. Well, I guess, I was recommending a few people to bench DJ Moore on SiriusXM and on Twitter and the radio hits I did last week. So, you know, I'm glad that advice kind of carried through. I wish it wouldn't have happened due to a concussion, though. Like, it just,
right.
That always leaves a sour taste when it's an injury that's a result of that.
Absolutely. I hear you on that. I think what Kyle Allen and Will Greer did is make everybody appreciate what a healthy Cam is like. So we'll see. We're going to sign off on that note. I want to thank Yahoo Fantasy Sports for sponsoring us. Joe, thank you for doing this. And good luck on your other media ventures today.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll hear me enough over the next 3 days that I think a lot of people are going to be tired of listening to my voice if you are a RotoWire fan. Of course, SiriusXM later today, and then I'll be doing the podcast with Jake Letarski going over the free agent additions to pick up for Week 17 and a 2020 very, very early first-round mock draft that we'll be also touching on for Tuesday's edition. We'll record today, but it'll be posted Tuesday.
And to that end, this is my last regular season football podcast. Not broadcasting on Christmas Day. So thank you for listening to me all season long. And good luck for those of you playing Week 17. Congrats to those of you who took down the chip. Take care. Thanks for listening to RotoWire.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.